your mother says to you when you're not going away to college, but when you're a child, to keep you from bodily harm. It's called, don't put it in your mouth. Don't put it in your mouth. You don't know where it's been. Don't assume it's candy for a minute. Don't take it from the ground or from a strange old man. Other kids have vanished when they did it.
All right, guys.
Don't bring it in the house because it's not a toy. Don't you ever point it at your sister. Go put it in your room. I'll wash your mouth with soap. Then I'll put you two in separate corners. Did you bring enough for everyone? Keep it to yourself or share Go upstairs and think of what you've done. You're just not my kid, I swear.
I swear, I swear, I swear.
Don't swing that thing around. You just might poke an eye. Wipe that grin before it sticks forever. Don't leave it on the floor or feed it to the dog. If you break it, you won't get another. How many times do I have to tell you? In one ear and out the other. Don't try talking with your mouth, or you're behaving like your father. If you want to grow up healthy, knock it off and put it down. Keep it clean and safe for later. And don't you put it in your mouth. Don't put it in your mouth. What if you should choke, even though you didn't choke the last time? You jump right off the bridge because the neighbor did. You should try to make your brain work sometime. Let me see your hands, both hands, both sides. Stop that slipping now and blow and blow. And what is best for you is best for me. Don't ask why or how, just go, just go, 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 just go. If you don't want to eat, we'll find someone who will. Starving kids in India will love it. And you'll just go to bed and stay there for a week, or put it in your mouth and swallow it. How many times do I have to tell you? In one ear and out the other. Don't try talking with your mouth full. You're behaving like your father. If you want to grow up healthy, knock it off and put it down. Keep it clean and safe for later. And don't you put it in your mouth. Knock it off.
And that was Uncle Banzai, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides, a twice-weekly show concerned with civil rights in Santa Cruz, particularly for those who have neither money nor rights most of the time, poor people. I'm Bathrobes, Pierre Robert Norris, and this again is 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. We do have a call-in number here, so if you want to get in touch with us while we're on the show, if you have any reactions to what we're saying here, if you have anything that we're not saying that you think we should be saying, give a call to 427-3772. I'll try to keep a weather eye on the phone, and we'll include you in the conversation. That's what we really want to do. That's what free radio is really all about, is including the community, expanding into an ever broader dialogue as to what's the really crucial issues that we face here in the community, at least the ones I'm concerned about, I want to draw you into. If you are unable to call at this time, maybe you don't have a dime, don't have two dimes, don't have a quarter, are busy, but you want to make some comments later, you can call me on my home phone, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Again, the number on air, 427-3772. The number off air, in case you want to leave a message, it's 423-HUFF. And this is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. You were listening to Uncle Banzai, a group that put out a great album in the 80s called Boys Want Sex in the Morning. And before we begin the show, we're going to play that song for you, just to get you interested, all you prurient folks. And then we'll introduce our special guest. We have a man who's come all the way down from Medford, Oregon.
Eugene,
I'm sorry. Very good, yes. This is an activist of no mean stripe. This is the notorious and distinguished Charles Gray. Say hello, Charles.
Hello, I don't think I deserve that introduction, but anyway, here I am.
I think you do. And you can talk a little bit further away from the mic, because I'm finding out that we actually do have a decent mic today. I'm not sure what happened. I want to commend the engineers, whatever happened. Before we put you on, it's a little bit more music, and then we're going to go straight into Bathrobe Spears Broadsides.
Boys want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, when I'm not my best.
Boys want sex in the morning, petting and pawing, tearing at my breast.
Boys want someone who's winsome, someone to pin,
someone to undertake.
Boys want someone to fall on, someone to crawl on,
someone half awake.
Boys want sex in the morning, sex in the morning,
covers at my knees.
Boys want rotten conditions, passive positions,
I am a trapeze.
Someone who's sleepy, someone who's keeping napping in 2 days.
Want somebody firsthand, someone to burst
and then go back to sleep.
There is nothing I like better than a jostle now and then,
with the hands under the sweater and the back that starts to bend.
But before my eyes are open, I don't want to have to hide
from a simpleton still poking with a thimble full of pride.
Boys want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, soiling the sheets.
Sex while I'm yawning, suddenly spawning
when I'm half asleep.
Boys want someone unconscious, somebody not just waiting for a thrill.
Boys want sex with surprises, sex with sunrises,
someone on the pill.
There is nothing like a lover who can satisfy your needs,
and the joy when you discover just how often he succeeds.
But before my eyes can focus, I don't need him to surprise
by descending like some locust on a field of sleeping thighs.
Boys want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, when I'm still not fresh.
Boys want something that strikes them, someone who likes them,
fondling their flesh.
Boys want someone to take and someone to break and comment on their size.
Boys want someone to prod and someone who'll nod
and then just close her eyes.
And that, again, was another selection from Uncle Banzai, Boys Want Sex in the Morning. And you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz and Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, 3 hours of civil rights for the poor. My guest today is Charles Gray, an activist, medical worker, is that fair to say?
Yeah.
How else would you describe yourself, Charles?
Well, I've been involved in the anti-nuclear weapons work and also solidarity work with Central America, and I've worked with homeless, or as we call them in Eugene, houseless persons. I did that also when I lived in Santa Cruz back in the latter part of the 80s.
That's Eugene, Oregon you're talking
I'm
about.
I'm in Eugene, Oregon now. Yeah,
so you're sort of visiting town at the moment.
Yeah, sure. Just for a couple of days. Right.
Well, the first time I met you, as I remember, or generally when I came to know you, was back in the fall of 1988 when we were importuning the city council to allow people at least to be able to sleep in their vehicles, let's put it this way, before receiving a ticket, the police would warn them, and the council was refusing even that very minor dispensation to homeless people. At that time, there was no open-air shelter. There may again be no open-air shelter, but right now there is an open-air shelter open for at least probably another month, which houses 100 to 200 people legally. That is to say, it allows for people to put up tents at the corner of Highway 1 and Highway 9. But at that time, there was no such shelter. You became involved. I believe you spoke at City Council. You became interested in the case of Anders Kaur, who was arrested for trespassing, I believe, in the Pogonip. You may remember that case.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
And the trespassing meaning he was sleeping up there, and he went to jail for a long time, relatively a couple of months, I believe, and then had a trial in Tom Kelly's court, Judge Kelly's court. And you were also you also while you were here in Santa Cruz have been adamant and principled about your belief that each individual, or at least you, should use only your share of the world's wealth. And you built a dwelling that was not, was it up to code? I don't know.
No way.
But how much did that thing cost you to build?
It cost $100.27.
Oh, really? And it actually was quite a structure. It was like it was a room. It had a roof. It had a, what did it have in it? Describe it for the audience.
Well, there's so much waste, you know, people altering buildings. They have big dumpsters outside, and they dump a lot of really good materials, windows and lumber and everything. So I just, I was living with some folks that I couldn't afford the rent, and I needed to do something else. So I decided to build a shelter in the backyard and take the risks, you know, because it would be illegal. But so I had about 6 months to gather materials together, and there's so much wasted that wasn't so difficult to build a small room. And I used almost totally recycled materials. I bought a few bolts, I think, and just a very few things. Built a very nice passive solar-heated little shelter. It was really quite beautiful. And used these kind of, I think they're aluminum plates that printers use to sheathe the outside of it to keep the water out. And anyway, it was a really delightful little place, and still stands.
Have you been back there? Are you now?
Yes, I slept there last night.
Oh, no, an illegal dwelling. So there you have it, a criminal in the studio, a typical. We tend to have criminals a lot in the studio.
I don't think you can live on your share of the world's resources and be legal, you know, because our codes and everything are built to try to drive people the codes try to force you into the occupational system and to be able to, in order to have enough money to pay the rents and stuff for overhousing ourselves. And we've gotten accustomed to having pretty fancy digs. And so you can't really live on your share of the world's resources in the kind of housing that is currently being built. There's no affordable housing being built, really, very damn little anyway. And it's the same thing in Eugene. We're building mansions for the rich and nothing for the virtually nothing for the poor. And nor are we allowing people their inalienable right to shelter themselves. It's the same situation in Eugene as I assume it still exists in Santa Cruz. There's a camping ban. People are hassled by the police if they sleep in their vehicles on the streets. After a 3-year struggle, we finally got a campground where it was legal for people to sleep for 6 months out of the year, the worst months of the winter. And then it, unfortunately, from the point of view, I think, of some people, so much mutual aid and community developed among the campers at this campground. It held about 90 to 100 people. I think some people are actually afraid of that development of community. They might get politically organized. And so anyway, it's closed every summer, and people have to scatter again and again become criminalized. They go off in the national forests, and they sleep around wherever they can find a place in town.
You know, in Santa Cruz, we have just the reverse. The campground that's legal for people to sleep in, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's property at Highway 1 and Highway 9, which houses from 100 to 200, as I was saying before, closes in the winter when people are expected to cram their butts into the Armory winter shelter, regardless of their situation. You know, if you have pets, you can forget that. If you're an alcoholic and you have an alcohol problem and you tend to be intoxicated, even a little bit part of the time, that's a no-no. There used to be problems with couples, though I think they may have set up some arrangements for couples and for children. But the freer, more spacious, more independent, more mutual aid, provocative kind of situation which exists during the summer at the open-air shelter, although I'm not in any way calling it a paradise. The location sucks big time, and I've got numerous complaints about how staff have treated people there. Still, comparatively speaking, it isn't, you don't have to enter some kind of psychiatric program or social service program in order to get into the shelter or to get into the open-air campground now. You just show up. And I guess the same thing is going to be the case for the Winter Armory shelter, but again, it'll be indoors, it'll be removed, and the big problem I'm concerned with, and I'm going to talk to you about later here and get your thoughts on, is for those who want to keep the open-air shelter going, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless has decided it is going to put in community house, which is modular housing, modular trailers from Stanford, good for about 44 people, I understand, regardless of whether the open-air shelter finds a new place. Right now, city council members are looking at maps and trying to find a new place, but they're planning to do this, and I'm wondering, the problem we're going to have is if people want to oppose this move, they're really, I think, only going to be able to effectively do it, those who are using the campground, while they are together as a group at the campground, and that is going to start to end at November 1st, when the Winter Armory shelter becomes open on a weather-contingent basis, depending on how wet and how cold it is. You've done not only work here, but you've done work in other countries like Nicaragua?
Yeah, I've just had a long-term interest in the problems of the maldistribution of wealth, and I spent 3 years in Nicaragua out in the edges of the rainforest working in a community that had been wiped out by flood and also had suffered from the Contra War.
What years were that?
First time I was in Nicaragua was 85, 86, and then 89 to 92. So the 89 to 92 period was especially interesting because that was a period when the Sandinistas were working to be reelected, but got defeated because I think most people assumed that. Many people in Nicaragua assumed that if they voted the Sandinistas back into power, that the war would never end, that the United States would never lay off of Nicaragua. And so they finally decided they had to vote the Sandinistas out because they just were losing too many of their sons and lovers and so forth to the war. So anyway, this community was a very, very poor community. And
what was the name of the community?
Mulukuku. It sounds like a bird name. It's nice, Mulukuku. But what happened after the war, the United States and the World Bank and the IMF imposed a structural adjustment program on Nicaragua, which means you cut government spending for all sorts of things. You privatize whatever public wealth there is. It's similar to Reaganomics on a world scale, and it's especially hard on the poor because health programs, education programs, subsidies for transport and basic food needs are all eliminated. And so then Nicaragua, on top of that, in Nicaragua, the suffering of the war had a long aftermath, of course. It really destroyed the economy. And the government made promises to the Contra that if they would lay down their arms, if they would disarm, then they would be promised land and credit so they could get a new start. And they promised the same thing to Sandinistas who would put down their arms. Well, okay, people put down their arms or hid them or whatever temporarily, But the government never came through with their promises because of these structural adjustment programs. The government was strapped, and besides, the rich in the country in no way wanted to share what they had with these ex-soldiers. On both sides were mostly campesinos. And so a lot of the ex-contra moved into Mulukuku so that the population, which had been formerly strongly supportive of the Sandinistas, became about 50-50. And since the government didn't come through with their promises, the people built shacks along the roadsides. They did...
Were these shacks up to code?
Well, they were traditional. They were what the campesinos built whenever. You know, their houses were very simple. They were built of bamboo and thatch. And they weren't there weren't any codes, but the people did assert their right to shelter themselves. What are they going to do? You know, they're going to sleep in the rain, and so at least you didn't have the situation which we too often have in this country, where the basic right to shelter yourself is actually denied. You know, if you're not willing to fit into the system and so that you can live in a middle class house, then you can't build any shelter at all, you know?
Yeah, even if you are willing, let's say, to take a ticket on the shelter line in San Francisco, under the Matrix program, there are, what, thousands and thousands, what, 3 to 10,000 homeless people in San Francisco and, I don't know, 1 to 2,000 shelter beds, and the word bed is used advisedly, and now they're rousting people in Golden Gate Park, they're rousting people in the other neighborhoods as part of Mayor Juggernaut Jordan's reelection campaign. But I guess the question I wanted to ask you, kind of going back to our situation here in Santa Cruz, based on your experience, I'm not quite sure whether you were an organizer in these different countries, and do you consider yourself an organizer in is it Medford you're at?
Eugene,
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
we'll get that right eventually.
Well, I work with a group in Eugene called the Homeless Action Coalition, and we were struggling to get this campground that has been going now for 3 years. It holds, it's not big enough, it holds about 100 people, 90 to 100 people, and the city agreed to it under rather strict rules that it be staffed 24 hours a day, which meant the budget went pretty high, and so now the state has cut back their contribution to the funding for the camp, and the city, instead of, similar to apparently, it's funny how these things seem to go on the same way and everywhere. The only money that the city had went for building a 12-bed shelter for mentally ill homeless persons, and that presumably is going to do something for a homeless population of hundreds that will have nothing. We'll have no campground because now there's no money for campground. And one of the people arguing against this city decision was a man who said that for many people, the campground gave them enough stability, enough hope, enough freedom that they kept their sanity. And that when people are sleeping on the street in the rain, why, it sometimes pushes them over the edge. So they're going to have a big lineup for these 12 beds. You know, that it made a lot more sense from the public health point of view, from the mental health point of view, to have a place where people could have some community where they would not be criminalized, but the vote went the other way. And so we've had some defeats recently. Another one is that we've been fighting to save some family student housing at the University of Oregon, housing that was quite simple, but people could rent a two-bedroom apartment for $185 a month. Now the university wants to demolish these 250 units, bulldoze them down, and build units where the rents will be between $400 and $500 a month for a similar, you know, couple of bedrooms.
Well, that's free enterprise in progress.
Well, it appears as if the university is trying to upscale itself and bring in more out-of-state students because they pay more money, and so too bad for the poor Oregonians who tend to live in the student housing. So I shouldn't say we, because I only kind of was peripheral in that struggle, writing letters and to the editor and attending a few hearings and things. But the people that were really involved in it came up with an excellent plan for the students to actually take over the self-management of this housing, take it off the hands of the university, get their own financing, and they had a plan that seemed quite viable, but the university, no way were they going to let that progress. So we've suffered some real defeats lately.
You know, I think it's interesting what you say, Charles, that this tends to be repeated in community after community. Here in Santa Cruz, as you may remember, and those of you listening might pick this up as a history lesson, the River Street Shelter, which is a continuing program which now serves 36 people, I think 18 of whom are mental health clients. I believe that's the right number. Originally, when Charles and I were doing activist work back in 1988 and getting arrested on the same property that is now the Open Air Shelter and was then managed by the River Street Shelter people, Paul Brindell and Fred Gray, they only had 2 beds for homeless people, and I think they had 10 or 12 beds for mentally ill people. Again, the idea being that there is a magnet for federal and state funding if you have the mentally ill label. Essentially, a lot of the money goes into bureaucrats' salaries. A lot of the money goes into pill pushing stuff. Money goes into buildings and supplies rather than going to people, where of course it needs to go. And that was a situation in Santa Cruz with the River Street Shelter, which was acquired for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, when they could have spent a fraction of that amount and established a campground, which is what Calamity Jane Immler, who was an activist who was also working with us at that time and whose hunger strike in the mid-80s provoked the acquisition of this property. They were, they had to do something to stop her from killing herself at the town clock and creating a state scandal once the media got a hold of it. So they purchased this River Street Shelter property, which actually is just another bureaucratic boondoggle. I mean, sure, it's nice for the 36 people, but, hey, our phone's ringing. Let's take a call. Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi there yourself. Can I get in on this history lesson?
Sure.
Cool.
Sounds like this is Lighthouse Linda, Linda LaMaster.
This is sometimes what's left of Linda.
Yes.
It's nice to hear your voice, Charles. And also a little bit about the North. What you were saying, Robert, about boondoggles, what sometimes I agree with your thing as a boondoggle, and sometimes I have a different view. But what I don't like about how these monies come trickling down is that there's these fads. There are these bureaucrat-run fads, like roofing is a fad. 1 year you could get state money for it, but you couldn't use it for anything else. And I think this season it's case management, which is a kind of paperwork, I gather. But I suppose there's more to it than that. But because locally we, and I want to include activists as well as people paid for doing this, we tend to pursue where we think that money is going to be, it shapes the kind of program we get, rather than looking at what people are saying they need in their life. So I really agree with what Charles was saying about a baseline, where a person has some say themselves in what kind of dignity they establish, or, like where a person is setting their own goals about how to make their life work better if they're homeless,
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that might not mean a roof. But to get any social services here in our county, for example, you have to be saying one of the things you need right away is a roof in order to get some of the other things you need or get help with them.
Do you want to comment on that, Charles?
Yeah, sure. It's nice to hear your voice, Linda.
And
I have so many positive memories of when I lived in Santa Cruz and all the good people here in the struggle for some kind of social justice. So it's nice to hear your voice. It's funny, we have this... I very much agree with you that so often we do not take advantage of the creativity and resources within the community of people who are poor, through often no fault of their own, and or by choice because the system sucks, so to speak. And so you have this kind of a paternalistic, condescending kind of approach from the system. They want... They see their solutions for the homeless. They often do not consult the homeless, and so they create situations of dependency. If the homeless go for it, because after all, you got to have something over your head.
Yeah.
Why?
When you're between a rock and a
hard place. Not really contribute to people working together and solving their own problems and having the dignity and self-respect that usually involves.
Yeah.
We've got one positive thing going in Eugene, and that's a homeless guy who is a veteran and who has put together a proposal and for a private camp, or at least semi-private camp, that would be tied in with jobs doing environmental restoration work in the river river basins of Oregon, and it with a special emphasis on recovering drug people with drug problems and alcoholics.
Yeah.
He's a recovering alcoholic himself, and though that doesn't meet the needs of a lot of homeless people, it will meet the needs of people who've taken that particular path. And he's having a hard time getting funding, but he's a very resourceful and very good organizer, and so we have some hope that we're going to at least have the advantage of this is a self-help project, and
yeah.
it's not going to depend on the welfare state bureaucracy type of problems that we've been having for so long.
The way vets are treated in most cities, that's going to be such good news if it gets off the ground. It'll spread like wildfire. Even our city, veterans, there is no shelter unless you can commute to Stamford, which meets the special and unique needs of our soldiers that have come back and not been welcomed home. I mean, that's just one population. Anyway, I'll let you guys go, but thank you. I think we need to be concerned about our own community when we set the values that whatever resources trickle down get used for.
Do you have any updates for us, Linda, before you go? Housing Now, I know, is a province of yours. You've also been involved with the Community Action Board recently. I think you said you attended one of their meetings. In fact, you were honored by them as a...
Oh, yeah.
You got a certificate of appreciation, and I think you mentioned that there was... Some concerns were raised at that Community Action Board meeting about this plan to dump 150 to 200 homeless people and set up...
No, we didn't talk about that. We talked about the youth curfew,
which is an issue
countywide, and it's really important, but I think CAB should take a role and look at that. I mean,
so the youth curfew, again, that's the countywide proposal to make sure that people who are under 18 will be under threat of police stop if they're out after 11 o'clock at night, and that's coming down the pike in early November.
And I'm trying to get the word out to homeless families that have kids. I mean, you know, you could have your 11-year-old scooped up because he missed you by 5 minutes at the movie house or something. The cities that have curfew laws aren't enforcing them. A city council member here, Scott Kennedy, said that they believe, from their own attorney's advice, that this city's curfew law is unconstitutional, so they just ignore it rather than create more problems. But I'm trying to get the word out that this is going to be harder hit among poor people, transitioning families, homeless kids, than it is the rest of the population.
And what is CAB?
A whole different impact on people that need to go out after dark than people that have little cars and mopeds, you know.
What has been the reaction of CAB when you brought this up? Did they wholeheartedly oppose the curfew? Did they stand up and support it?
I wouldn't say they were wholehearted. They determined to invite Sheriff Mark Tracy, who's supposed to be working this up for youth, for the County Board of Supervisors, to a future meeting. So they're going to have the sheriff who's supposed to implement this and who stands to gain money, if it is implemented, in my opinion, be the person that walks them through the proposed ordinance, which is a patchwork from others between San Jose and Capitola. It's not a well-written law to start with, but that's not the important issue here. The important issue here is that it would be instituting selective enforcement and a special prosecution and persecution of young people, setting kids up for their first strike.
Uh-huh.
Not to mention possibly locking them in police stations overnight or in the, what do they call the youth jails here, if your parents don't happen to have a phone, let alone a home.
Now, have you been able to express your views to Sheriff Mark Tracy on this issue? Has he contacted you? Or have you contacted him?
No, but I've put letters up expressing my view addressed to other families that might have ever been homeless and had kids at the same time throughout Live Oak, thanks to some volunteer help from someone who has a car, which I don't. And I have tried two or three times both to call and, as you know, one of the two times to drop in and get Mr. Tracy's attention, but he's not obliged to do that. He's been requested by the County Board of Supervisors to talk to the official commission bodies that the county has, and I gather he's doing that, but I feel he needs to talk to young people, the people that it's aiming this law at. They're just going to make criminals out of people before they're even adults. And who knows what kind of liabilities fall on their parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just what I need. I mean, I'm still paying a $3,000 parking ticket debt to the city from when I was homeless 5 years ago. You know, the last thing I need is for them to be locking my kids up, too, because we don't have a place to be
And you're facing homelessness again, as I understand.
Well, I didn't really want the whole public to have to deal with it until I'm out there, but yes. I mean, like most people that have less income than they have rent payments, you know, we support the landlord's industry here. It's worse here than most of the state, probably most of the country, in terms of the proportion of your income that housing gets.
Yeah, I'd like to say something
about
that.
Yeah, go ahead, Charles, wants to comment.
I remember when I lived here before, I did a little, when I was working on Anders Core case before the courts, I did a little study of the increase in housing costs in Santa Cruz relative to the purchasing power of the minimum wage, and I was able to show that that a person on minimum wage could buy a lot less housing, in fact, hardly any housing at all. You know, the smallest room in a shared house was about all they could afford. Well, back in 1970, they could afford a one-bedroom apartment. And I've done a similar kind of thing in Eugene, because Eugene has a vacancy rate that is often less than 1%, which gives the landlords really no control at all on the rents they charge. And the rents went up 10% this last year.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So it's a landlord monopoly situation.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely.
Well, yeah, they say in the streets that it's gone down just a tad here. Landlords are having more vacancies here than they've ever had, even since the earthquake. But I don't feel it affecting the costs. Uh-huh. I'm out there looking right now. Not that it's going to do any good without capital. With children and without a little cash fund, you're not very good shape to compete here for the little housing.
We have another guest who's entered the studio, Nutcracker Nick Whitehead, the grand old man of Span. But we don't want to drive Charles away. I think we can house everybody here for the moment, anyway.
You three guys should have a talk. I'd love to listen.
We can all share the world's our particular share of the world's available oxygen at the moment here in the studio.
Or get a snorkel.
Indeed. But you do call us back later in the show if you've got more you want to add, Linda. I'm going to give other people a chance to call in now.
Thank you. It's good hearing you, Charles.
Yeah, nice to talk to you, Linda.
And for those who don't know it already, you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, the only Free Radio Santa Cruz that I know of, though hopefully there'll be more to come. Stations will pop up everywhere, 1, 2, 3, let 1,000 stations bloom, in the words of the late Führer, Mao Zedong. there you go, that's not politically correct these days, but that's all right. You are also
in some circles.
In some circles, yes. You're also. We have lines open now. If you want to call in to 427-3772, and you're also invited to do that. If you want to comment on what Charles and I and Linda have been saying, what Nick is going to be saying, if you can figure that out.
Yeah, I want those comments in advance.
Yeah, so Nick needs to have that. He doesn't want to be caught with his pants down, particularly with those pants, I'll tell you. Maybe it's time to take those pants off, Nick. He just came in, he's got paint-covered pants. Here.
Okay, I'm going to take them off on the air. Everybody hear this. Zip, zip.
This is actually happening. This is amazing. You should see this, folks. This is the prurient interest. Nick claims to be the comic relief, but we will leave that to your judgment as to whether you think he's relieved.
Don't look now.
Let me turn off the echo chamber. I know it probably sounds pretty exciting, but there we go. Now there's less of an echo chamber in the studio. Charles, you've also written extensively on this concept of an individual's proper share of the world's wealth. I wonder if you can talk about that, and has there been any change in that situation since 1988? Have you, have other people picked up this idea? What's the story with that?
Well, in 1977, I began trying to live on what appeared to me to be my equal share of the world's income, and to neither own, consume, nor control more than my share. And it took a while. I used to be a sociologist. It took a while to get the data together to know just what that share might be. But anyway, for the past 18 years, I've been attempting to live on my share, which right now, according to my original calculations, is about $160 a month. And that's one of the reasons why I've had to learn how to shelter myself outside of establishment housing. And really, no way could I do that, paying the rents that are asked of people these days. And anyway, the concept is, the reason I decided to live this way is I'm appalled by the maldistribution of wealth in the world, with enormous wealth in among some peoples and countries, and incredible poverty among the rest of the people of the world. Most of the people of the world, in fact, about 80% have less than their their share, and 20% have a lot more than their share. And it's a little startling to some people when you realize that even adjusting for purchasing power differences between countries, why a person with an income of more than about $7,500 a year is actually in the richest fifth of the people of the world. And so I've been living on this rather small amount of money. I work about a third of my time in order to make my bread money. And until recently, when I'm now 70 years old, I got a small Social Security check, so that now I do mostly social justice work and with the homeless and with the effort to somehow deal with this maldistribution of wealth, which is getting more extreme all the time. The CEOs of our major corporations now have about 120 times the income of the production workers in the factories that they own. And that used to be something like 30 times. Now it's 120 times.
It's progress.
That's right. It contributes to the gross national product.
It's very gross. So
yes, very gross indeed. Yeah. And right in Eugene, we have a former CEO of Abbott Laboratories, came out to Eugene when he retired with several million bucks from the Abbott Laboratories agreement he made with them when they kind of didn't like him anymore, and he bought a he bought a factory near Eugene that produces these things called luxury coaches. I don't know if any of you have seen them around Santa Cruz. I imagine you have. They're like big buses, but they're very fancy looking, and indeed they are fancy, and they cost between $500,000 and $1 million a piece. Now this is an RV.
Right.
This is not a person's primary residence, so you can assume if somebody can afford $1 million for a bus, right, to travel around in style, why they must have a pretty fancy residence as well. And this man has the most the house in Eugene that has the highest assessed value of any house in Eugene, something like $1.3 million. Well, that's not a mansion like some of the mansions you have in this country, but for Eugene, it's big. And and he also, it was reported in the press, also has similar housing in Palm Springs, California. It's not exactly a working person's town. And some fancy suburb of Chicago, Forest Hills, Chicago. So this person and his wife, who apparently their children, are, if they had any, are grown and gone, these two people have something over $4 million worth of housing, just housing. And, of course, you can't live in more than one house at a time. And other people are sleeping in the rain. You know, that is how extreme it has become, and it's getting more extreme all the time. Actually, that's a tragedy, but it also gives me some feeling that as more people get crushed by this system, we're going to see more people organizing to break this grip on this obscene maldistribution of wealth.
Have you seen this happening in the last 5 or 10 years, or what's been your experience since you left Santa Cruz?
Well, you see little bits of it, but I think we're not seeing as much of it as is going to be necessary to make significant change. And but with Gingrich and his crowd, the Republicans may give them enough rope, and they may hang themselves, and there may be a reaction that will really shake this country up. That's what I'm hoping for, at least.
Although there are concerns with some of us that it may be the wrong kind of a reaction, sort of a...
Oh, of course. We could go to
fascism.
We could go to fascism, more repression. After all, we have the world's second largest prison population, or the largest, depending on which report you read, and building prisons is a growth industry. Along with building casinos and theme parks. Those seem to be the big growth industries in the United States at present time.
Yeah, and the drug war, of course. That brings in a pretty penny.
Yes, indeed.
Nick, do you have any comments on this as I fumble for my notes here?
On the wealth distribution.
Yes.
Well, remember a few weeks back, I went on the Homes Not Jails housing occupation in San Francisco, the Presidio, a team of people who were either homeless or close to it, occupied several apartment buildings on the Presidio base, because it was a to draw public attention to it. They weren't allowed. You know, a huge force of cops came and removed them. But they had barricaded themselves in, and it was on television. So I think certainly in the San Francisco Bay Area, there's a group drawing attention to this need. And, gosh, look at all the housing down at Fort Ord. I was down there when the president spoke, and I took a walk around the whole base. There's an enormous supply of housing. It cannot possibly all be consumed by the student body. In fact, most of it wasn't.
Yeah.
So there's definitely places to put people.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of hope in the whole idea of occupation, and it involves sometimes a considerable amount of suffering, and people who are already suffering so much, are not looking for more. I think the homeless advocates, those who aren't themselves homeless, have got to take on more of the suffering if we're going to see change. But occupation is an old tactic in housing and land struggles. We certainly saw it in Central America and in South America, where occupations, where in societies where you have an even greater maldistribution of wealth than you have in the United States, why people have simply squatted on land and have resisted, usually nonviolently.
Certain big cities on the East Coast, there's a law being passed that if property isn't used by the landlord and it lies fallow or vacant for long enough, then squatters can occupy it, and if they're willing to fix it up and apply for funds to do so, they can actually obtain permanent occupation of the building.
Yeah,
is that true? Is it true on the West Coast anywhere?
That I don't know. I know that it for a number of years that's been true in Holland, in the Netherlands. There are definite laws restricting a landowner's right to just let something sit empty. In Eugene, we have lots of land, but just try to get any for a campground so that people are not criminalized.
Yeah.
It sits there. Speculators own it. Developers own it. Some of it has all the utilities in, has the streets paved, and it just sits there, waiting for the right price. And that is totally immoral from my point of view. It's just it's a tragedy.
Well, I would guess then that from a strategic point of view, it's not much use going into these luxury, expanding economy areas or areas that have developed a large measure of prosperity. A much better chance for us is in depressed areas, either where there's industrial buildings or totally unused older office buildings that are never going to be viable again, or unused farmlands and stuff like that.
Actually, there is a Thanksgiving Homes Not Jails occupation planned nationwide, and there has been some discussion in Santa Cruz of joining that with our own occupation here, although activists are somewhat, not so much divided as somewhat isolated from each other, or that hasn't yet come up as a topic on an action agenda. But for those who are interested in such an occupation, or who think the idea bears further consideration, perhaps in solidarity with those who are doing it nationwide, or perhaps just on our own basis as a way of giving a wake-up call to the city council. I mean, the issue of the open-air shelter, I've continued to tout here week after week about the Citizens Committees for the Homeless's little plan displacing 150 to 200 people, and that may not even happen because the Citizens Committee does have to send that to for permits, I think zoning and planning and that sort of thing, and that's going to take them a number of months. Probably more than they had previously expected, and it can be appealed to City Council. So I don't want to get everybody running after a red herring. I think we should save this campground, but I think the broader issue of various abandoned buildings and shelters and squats throughout town needs to be investigated, and we need to support people who, like Charles, are living illegally in whether it be a squat, and the kind of penalties which people face. I talked to you about the case of Miguel Balderos, the man who was arrested for crawling in out of the rain to avoid the camping ban and the troll busters in 1991 because he had a flashlight. He was convicted of a burglary for being in somebody else's place, which he thought was an earthquake-damaged abandoned house. He has pleaded guilty
to a misdemeanor, actually to, I guess to a felony. Now maybe he's been, I'm not sure which it is, a felony or misdemeanor, but he is now facing, I think, a year in jail, although maybe that'll be reduced to 4 months, and 3 years probation. Why? For being homeless, in essence. So those interested in this whole issue of organizing around some squat movements, I encourage you to give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or just call in on the air here at 427-3772, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And you're listening to us, of course, at 96.3. That's what's happening now. Charles, are you looking at your watch? Are we going to have to lose you soon?
Yes, well, I'm only in Santa Cruz for a couple of days. I came down here on the Green Tortoise, and I've wanted to come back many times in the last 3 years since I've been back in this country, because I just really... have lots of friends here, and so I'm trying to squeeze a lot of stuff in at these 2 days, but I really appreciate Robert Norse having contacted me and given me this opportunity to share some of my thoughts and hear what's happening here in Santa Cruz, because it's very similar to the things that are going on in Eugene. Police have been making sweeps of streets to satisfy some of the complaints of merchants and that sort of thing, and just not allowing people to sit or stand or whatever, you know, just... There's so many laws that are really so weird, you know, vagrancy laws and things like that. What do those things mean? You know, a person does not have a right to stand still on the planet that he was born on or she was born on. It's similar things all over the place.
No question. There's actually,
I think it comes back to some really fundamental things of there's still a lot of fear and misunderstanding and scapegoating and stuff that we have to somehow deal with, and because the basic attitude seems to be in so many communities is push the problem out of sight, you know, push it to somebody else's community, drive people out, make things so uncomfortable for them that they'll leave and go somewhere else. Well, there is no somewhere else. And we gotta look at the thing right here, wherever we are, and do something about it. And it is absolutely unacceptable to have this kind of situation that is being perpetuated by this fear and by this misunderstanding and by this effort to drive people away who you don't understand.
You know, statewide, there is a new law that was signed by Wilson last week, I believe. I've got a clipping here. I hope I can kind of dig it out from my mass of newspapers, which makes it illegal. It reinstitutes the loitering laws under the pretext of intent to sell drugs. If a police officer believes that you are tarrying with intent to sell drugs, you are now guilty of a misdemeanor. And this is a proposition this is actually Proposition N in Berkeley. Do I have that right? I believe so, yeah. Proposition N was the proposition that... And it passed in Berkeley, but I don't know that it's being enforced. We don't have much information on that, which in Berkeley, as a city ordinance, allows cops to... You cannot be within 20 feet of a boarded-up building, within 50 feet of numerous other structures, if you are tarrying with intent to... To sell drugs.
Well, it sounds as if they designed the law so that an officer, by observation, routine observation over a period of some days or weeks, would know who's selling drugs simply by observation, and it gives him a reason to go and remove them from that situation. That wouldn't be such a bad idea, I don't think, if it was hard drugs. But my actual... witnessing on the spot of the activities of the Berkeley police just in the area of People's Park, I have seen, and people have told me, that these cops know who the crack dealers are and they just leave them alone. They don't mess with the crack dealers on the street selling to youngsters mostly. And I don't know what the reason for that is. Perhaps you're a bit wiser than I am on that. Why do they just know who these crack dealers are and leave them alone at the street level?
Well, I don't want to spread misinformation, but I know that having spoken with Food Not Bombs activist Keith McHenry in San Francisco, who's kind of been watching this crack scene for a long time, he believes it has to do with really blatant corruption in the police department.
I think it must be.
Payoffs and...
It's gotta be.
you know, I mean, it's a very lucrative business, crack, and even marijuana. You know, it's probably the state's biggest agricultural business. And, you know, it shows up in all the papers. But getting back to this loitering business, we're not talking about selling drugs. We're talking about loitering with intent to sell drugs. It's a way of driving people on, as Charles, you were talking about earlier. It's a way of making sure that they move from one place to another. It's a way of giving whoever wants to file a complaint an opportunity to get rid of, quote, undesirable characters, where undesirable, you know, has to do with how they're dressed and who knows what color skin they have and so forth. And they couldn't, this law is not really flying in Berkeley, although it was passed, you know, in the election, although I believe it was defeated in a majority of the districts, but it won, and it may have even been defeated in the district that it may get mainly targeted, which was a black district. I know Proposition O, the companion proposition, which makes it illegal to sit on the sidewalk in Berkeley, though it passed citywide, it was defeated in all the districts where the homeless were a majority, or not a majority, where the homeless were, quote, a problem, and they weren't a majority by any means in terms of the voting. So now we have a statewide law that preempts all this and lets cops in Santa Cruz arrest people for loitering with intent to sell drugs. So I don't want to make a big deal out of this, but I do want you to educate you, have your vitamins ready, and you know, maybe you can sell some vitamins down there and make a real. What am I saying? Anyway, Charles, you want to butt in here?
On that happy note, Robert, I need to say goodbye.
Okay. Well, before you go, Charles, let me ask you this: how can people get in touch with you if they want to, say maybe read something you've written or discuss issues further with you one way or another, or contribute to the struggle for people in. In Eugene, which I understand is where you're returning to.
Probably the best way is to address a letter to the Homeless Action Coalition, 458 Blair Boulevard, Eugene, Oregon, 97402. That's 458 Blair Boulevard, Eugene, Oregon, 97402. Probably the best way, because my telephone situation is a little iffy.
Okay, yeah. Anyway. You probably haven't paid your bill in some time. Well, listen, Charles, thank you very much.
Okay,
really
Robert.
A pleasure having you here.
Nice
and
nice to see you again.
All right, I'm going to try to harass you later. We'll see if I can grab more than my share of your world's time for you. So, well, that was a privilege. Charles was. We had dozens of speakers before City Council in 1988 as we sought to let them know the kind of abuses police were committing against homeless people and the problems they were having under the sleeping ban. And Charles is one of the most eloquent speakers. I, of course, was very eloquent myself, as I always am. But Charles gave a new meaning to the word eloquent, in my view, at those council meetings. I'm going to give us a little break now with a little comedy. And then I'm going to give you a report from Berkeley on the serious side. Carol Denny, Cornerstone Carol Denny, as I call her, a Berkeley activist, has been watching what's happening at People's Park. And I was hoping to do actually a recorded interview, pass it on to you, but I haven't quite got the technology in place, almost. So next show I may actually be able to give you some interviews with folks far afield that are actually audible, not just babble-babble and rabble-babble and hard to hear. What you're going to hear now is a little bit of the Jolly Roger comedy troupe that Carol is also a part of from Free Radio Berkeley, a tape which Full Heart Phil Free has been seeking high and low, but I have kept it under wrap, under lock and key, but now I'm bringing it out for my show. So here's your opportunity to hear a little of the Jolly Roger comedy troupe. It's topical comedy from Berkeley, but I think you'll enjoy it. Looks like dead air from Santa Cruz rather than topical comedy from Berkeley. Let me take a second look at this tape. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We will get this together, rewind the sucker, and try again. While we're doing that, however, I'm going to give you
an update or two. Actually, we have our in-studio comedian who will do his own riff while we're getting ready for the out-of-studio. You can have an out-of-studio experience preceded by an in-studio experience. Here you go, Nutcracker Nick.
What, look at this picture. What am I showing you on my picture?
What are you showing? It looks like two loving pigs that are nestling each other's nostrils there.
Two big, creamy, pink pigs in this folder that I brought down to the studio. That's front page news. And the reason I got the pictures of the pink pigs that you can't see over the air is because this is from the Sentinel newspaper last Sunday. The headline was, Scotts Valley votes in Kiss a Pig contest.
I've always believed police officers need more affection, so perhaps...
I can't hear you.
I was saying that I was criticized by Sergeant Andy Crane at the last... at the last Citizens Police Review Board meeting for having a Fuck the Police sticker. And I tried
No, this is nice stuff. This is Kiss a Pig.
Well, I think, you know, one has to realize sexual repression, as we know, is a serious part of our society, and for all adults, fucking is an option.
Oh, get out of here. Let me read the story. It says, a Kiss a Pig fundraiser is underway in Scotts Valley because of the city's observation of Red Ribbon Week. Red Ribbon Week is a way of getting kids to abstain from smoking pot, among other things. And it says, the Police Department of Scotts Valley and the Red Ribbon Committee will sponsor a free teen dance and skating night at the rink, which is a nice place for kids to go. Then there will be a raffle, and then there'll be the Kiss a Pig contest. And the idea is that the kids sign a pledge card that they won't use any substances. And if they get to sign the pledge card, then they can have the fun, of picking which of their teachers is going to have to kiss a pig in front of the whole student body. What a funny idea.
That's a real winker, but in the meantime, we have a radio call of... Your Free Radio Santa Cruz. Good morning.
Hi, Robert.
Oh, this sounds like a man from previously out of town, Skidmarks Bob Duran.
That's me.
Skidmarks Bob, you're actually featured in the new Street Shit Sheet, which is due to hit the newsstands this afternoon. You might be wanting to take a look at that before
the
you...
Newsstands.
Yes,
oh, really?
Indeed. Yes,
Skid,
indeed.
Skidmarks.
The new stands and the old stands as well.
But that's beautiful.
Yes, indeed.
Hopefully it's true. But anyway,
who let that pig in here?
You're sort of a pig watcher yourself, aren't you, Bob?
Yeah. I noticed you guys are talking about stuff like that.
Hey, get out, pig.
Need some updates. Maybe I could tell the listeners or something.
Please
like
do.
That.
I'd love an update.
Well, let's see. What was it? The day before last, on Barson Street, the police had a sort of a checkpoint on Barson Street at Barson and Clay Street off of Barson and Ocean, you know, where the big drug ring is, supposedly.
At the 7-Eleven area, or?
No, this is off of, you go down Ocean toward the beach, and then you make a right on Barson, where there's a bar there, and there the old Togo's used to be there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a one-way street, and people go down there, and they buy drugs and stuff, and the I was down there watching this police van set up, and they took over one lane, and then they're like stopping cars, and then some cop came walking up to me and asked me if I was curious, and I said, yeah, I'm curious. And so he basically told me that they're targeting the buyers in the area now, and what they're doing is they're using the vehicle code to pull certain people over and question them about what they're doing in the area, basically. Mm-hmm. So if you had a taillight out or window cracked or something like that, then they're going to pull you over. They're going to check your ID. They're going to run you, see if you got warrants. And then possibly that will lead to searching your vehicle. And I told the officer, you know, that's funny because they're doing the same exact thing up north in the Emerald Triangle, which is up in Mendocino County and Humboldt Counties. And their CHP and DEA are working very closely together, looking for certain people who are suspicious enough to pull over and search their vehicle and find, oh, it's harvest season too. Oh, what do you know? So they're enforcing the vehicle code up there being able to search vehicles and find lots and lots of marijuana that's coming from up there and going down here. And so just to put the word out, they weren't there last night on Barson Street, but they'll probably put up these things again And anybody who's traveling on Highway 1, 1, or 101, to beware of what's going on.
You know, that's interesting. Nutcracker Nick here is shaking his head and saying, they can't search your vehicle. I think I disagree with you, Nick, but go ahead.
No, I've seen television programs on this subject. They can ask you if they may search your vehicle, okay? And if you don't agree to that, they can perhaps look around and find some signs of suspicion, like if they see some paraphernalia on the seat of the car. You know, they can look through the windows, and they can even claim they see something there. But they can't automatically search your vehicle, Bob.
Well, I know that, but there's certain intimidating ways that they can search your vehicle. Like, you know, I know you have drugs in here, I want to search your vehicle. And they intimidate people, and of course the ignorant masses will follow along with that and allow them to search the vehicle.
Oh. Yeah, but let's realize that lots of court cases taken by the ACLU have managed to get such evidence thrown out. Even if they find something, if they did not have your permission to search the vehicle and they forced the issue, the evidence is usually thrown out.
Yeah, but most people don't know that.
Yeah, so we got to educate people.
It's actually good to, as a rule of thumb, though police officers say something like, well, if you have nothing to hide, you won't mind if we search your vehicle.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's actually what they were doing to hippies and deadheads 4 days ago at the Ford's parking lot. I have some interviews around that, which I may be playing later in the show. And they would then, even in those situations, the people would say, no, you can't search, and they would search anyway. And, of course, the problem is it's the police officer's testimony against the victim's testimony.
Yeah.
And there you have it. But I there's also the fact that I think your rights to avoid search and seizure in a car have been very strictly limited. If, for instance, you're carrying any kind of contraband, you have to have it in a locked box in a locked trunk to really have any kind of safety. And then if they have a dog who's barking and sniffing, that might be considered probable cause to go after that for all you you marijuana tokers out there. Go ahead with your report though, Bob.
So, and the next thing in my report is I got to talk to Alicia from East Bay Food Not Bombs. I don't know if you already talked about this, but Arcata Food Not Bombs is coming up for their court case on November 7th.
Oh, I didn't hear about that. No,
yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, the injunction hearing or whatever it is. I don't know exactly what part of the case it's in. But basically what's happening right now is that they're serving every day in Arcata, and the police are coming out with various video gear, and then they're serving the injunction to Food Not Bombs, and then they're filming it, and then they're getting these people who are serving on film, and they're threatening people with arrest and fines and stuff like that. And this is all leading up to the court case, which is going to be on November 7th.
And how many people are being charged, you know?
I'm not sure. I don't know the whole story on that. You might want to check your sources, but it's going to be mostly the main organizers, or I think it's anybody that's serving that is being charged with violating a court injunction.
And Arcata is serving daily?
Yeah, every day. Every day, I think at around 5 o'clock in some park out there. I don't know. I haven't been out there, but I'm planning on going up there, and so people want to go up there and support them. That's November 7th. Some courtroom in Arcata. I don't know where.
Planning on some kind of a caravan, a car caravan?
I don't know, maybe, but I might be already up there. So.
Is there a place people can call if they're interested in more information about this?
I don't know the number right now, but I'll see if I can get it out there.
Well, if anybody's interested, you might try giving a call to 423-HUFF, and I will then pass on any information I've gotten from Bob. And Bob, you can call me at 423-HUFF and let me know, and I can act as a sort of a middle person here.
Middle person.
Middle guy.
Middle guy.
I don't want to say middle man, because everybody knows I'm a real man. I don't need to repeat that. You know what I mean? I'm tough. I'm great.
Yeah, right.
I'm Mr. Polygamy. What can I say? Well, I don't brag on the air.
Okay. Still don't have sex with pigs, but we'll leave that out.
I see. Well, that's because you're a bigot. You always have been. You always will be, Bob.
Thank you.
Yeah, certainly.
Thank you so much.
Is there more you wish to say before we cut you off?
Just fuck the police state.
I see. Well, that again, you claim not to have engaged in sexual behavior, and you offer that advice to those in the... that's rather contradictory, Uncle Bob.
Isn't that one of his favorite songs on the street, Fuck the Police State? I think I heard him sing that one.
I don't know. right.
Never said that.
Bob has never used foul or inappropriate language in a public place that I remember.
Fuck no, I would never use shitty language like that.
I agree
especially
completely.
On the goddamn air.
I want to let our listeners know that I'm probably going to preempt some of Nick's program, which he's come in here faithfully to do, about affirmative action, which I find incredibly boring, I might say. Nick is going to hate me for this and pummel me later.
there's some other stuff, actually. It's not that.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. I was getting mighty tired of these, you know, politically correct types at UC talking about affirmative action, frankly. But that was during my last show. But we do have a long story from Z Magazine this month. You may have seen, Bob, on Free Radio Berkeley and what's happening up there. It's a very interesting article.
Uh-huh.
And there's also a report from Carol Denny, which I got this morning. Carol Denny is a Berkeley activist, on the university's latest lying scumbag plan to dump food services, the free box, and other people's services at People's Park. That is actually coming right down the pike. Maybe they're going to coincide with Arcata. Who knows? It's, you know, fall is busting out all over, and I'm going to talk about that as we go on. But do you have any more reports? And who's that baby in the background, by the way?
That's Erastus.
Erastus. Is that child related to you, that poor child?
Of course he is.
He is?
He has something to say.
Okay, go ahead.
He's a great Erastus man.
Yeah. Well, speak a little more clearly.
Get off the air.
Get off
the...
No, he's saying, I love you. I love you so much.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he is. I can understand him. You cutie, you. You're just a goo-goo baby. I know you.
Isn't this the formation of the new Rasta religion, man? The Rastas, man.
No, you take care of that child, Bob. I'm calling Child Protective Services, man. We're going to make sure you don't mess around. We got an eye on you, boy.
Uh-huh. I see.
All right.
Well, he'll be singing on the mall before long.
Singing on the mall. Have you heard anything more from Phil Free, by the way, in his latest Disturbing the Peace ticket?
Oh, they, I guess he went to court on Tuesday, and they had it sent to the DA for review.
For review, okay.
For review, which is the same thing they did to me, which they decided to pick me up like a week later. Like, I checked the DA's office, oh, it's still under review, and the next day they picked me up on the mall and took me to jail. And I've been trying to, you know, call in and find out about if it's turned into a warrant yet, and that's what the DA likes to do. They surprise you by arresting you on the mall and throwing you in jail.
Yeah, for those who aren't aware of this, Phil Free is a musician, as are you, Bob.
Yes. Well, that's what they say.
Some do, yes. Controversial songs such as Hospitality Nazis, that's one of Phil's favorites. Though Phil claims he's not as outspoken as you are. He said he's toned down his act in order to to offend the elderly and the children. And he's still trying to get the message out without using the, you know, piss, shit, fuck, motherfucker, cocksucker, and tits.
I've never said piss.
I would hope not.
Okay.
He got two Disturbing the Peace tickets from two businesses, essentially because they claimed he was disturbing the peace, but the first ticket was dismissed, and it was done in front of Alibaba's kiosk.
Uh-huh.
The second ticket was done in front of a jewelry store right across the street from Manx's, up from the coffee roasting company.
Uh-huh.
And it was the same two officers who gave both tickets. It looked like a content-based harassment effort. And Phil apparently has had better luck on the mall since then. He's been told, you know, he's been doing the one-hour street performers guidelines, move along when after the hour's up, so that we can preserve the, you know, general shared use of the space.
Right.
But I don't think he's gotten any further tickets. And now it looks like I'm hoping they're not going to do the same thing they did to both you and I, which is arrests on disturbing the peace out of the blue for something that happened weeks before. You remember that, and I certainly remember that. We were both arrested on that charge for different times. And speak of the devil, look who just kind of sleazed in. It's that musician without a name, Full Heart Free. He's babbling over there, talking to himself. The guy is... I don't know what to say. So
he does babble, doesn't he?
He babbles here.
Fuck you, Bob.
See what I mean? That kind of
language. How many times did I tell you quit announcing when I walk in the door?
He hates being announced.
He's a secret. I'm a secret, sneaky guy.
He's a very secretive kind of guy. You can hear that. I mean, the guy has got a soft voice. He's got a very kind of silhouette-ish kind of profile. You can hardly tell who he is from that coat he wears.
Uh-huh.
Except it says free on it.
What kind of riffraff this guy on the phone is going to raise?
This is amazing.
My God.
So
yeah, at least I'm not as abrasive. sure. He's not as abrasive as I am.
I'm glad. I'm at least we have that to thank for. Thankful for.
I've never said piss and I've never said tits.
All right. Well, let's keep that record.
Music.
Keep your record going there.
And okay.
I will leave you so that we can deal with this new menace that has arrived.
Okay.
And anything more you want to add, Bob? Any upcoming benefits we should know about, or
not that I know.
Other events. Okay, well, you know the number to call in, and for our audience, it's 427-3772. If you wish to refute this foul-mouthed singer, actually either of these foul-mouthed singers, and I invite anyone, including Ali, the Manx owner, or Neil Coonerty to call in and to discuss, or perhaps Jerry Vale could call in. Anyway, we'll have a whole open line here once you've hung up and I've stopped talking.
Ah, cool.
Cool.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Bye. Bye. Huff, huff, huff.
Okay, can I carry on with the...
All right, so
we have
Nutcracker Nick and the pig story, for those of you who forgot, and for those of you who are interested. Now, we're going to have a poll on this pig story later, so do stay tuned.
Okay,
continuing,
remember the Scotts Valley kids are getting these drug-free banners and flags that are going to be flying throughout Scotts Valley, no drug pencils, etc., and they're going to sign a list of which public officials they want to watch kissing a pig. And here, so you have to choose. This is the vote. you've got to choose which do you think among the Scotts Valley school children they're going to pick to see kissing a pig. Are they going to pick Big Pig Police Chief Steve Walpole? Are they going to pick District Attorney Art Danner to kiss a pig?
No,
isn't he busy kissing pigs all day behind the courthouse?
Well, it's possible.
Or does he just feel them up?
I saw Art Danner touching my sensitive part.
This is a sex educational show. I want you to know this is not without redeeming social value.
I'll pull my little curly pink tail.
Or are the kids going to want to see a pig being kissed by Assemblyman Bruce McPherson?
Hey, Bruce! I think that even a pig wouldn't be willing to kiss Bruce at this point. Perhaps later on when he's shown himself.
Well, I haven't run down. There's two more. Well, there's one more option.
Yes.
Fire Chief Mel Angel. You want to see an angel kissing a pig?
He's too hot to handle, that guy.
Too hot to handle.
I don't know Mel, and I don't want to... You know, I don't know if he deserves the distinguished company of those other three individuals that we've mentioned previously.
Well, we don't want to see the pigs kissing each other, because that would be perjury. Ugly scene. Finally, the final selection the kids might pick is their own superintendent of their school district, André Lacouture. You know, a very sophisticated pig kisser.
French kiss.
French kissing.
I have done a show on polygamy, and I will continue to be doing that topic, but bestiality remains to be explored. I want anyone who has had some interesting experiences of that to give us a call. but that's probably for another show.
Okay, talking about beasts, the canine police dogs will be providing entertainment for the kids throughout the school district. Watch them chase a well-dressed homeless person around the football yard or something.
Well, that could be amusing. Yeah.
And they might mention the use of army dogs in Mexico, mm-hmm, that are being used right now to chase those poor Chiapas peasants through the jungles. The 50,000 people on the run, the kids are sleeping out without bedding or covering on the ground. They've been forced out at gunpoint from their villages. I heard a report on one of the stations yesterday. It's terrible down there. Okay, just to round up this pig contest, your ballots, listen closely, listeners. If you want to join the kids in voting for your favorite kiss a pig victim, then you have to drop your ballots in the official collection box in the City Hall parking lot. And believe me, I'm quoting from the Sentinel. You have to drop the ballots in the wastewater bill collection box.
Even the Sentinel can sometimes give us a bit of a grin every so often. It's quite a yuck.
Part two of the pig story.
It's my fault, folks. I invited him.
In the same newspaper last Sunday, a Sentinel on a different page, it said 300-pound porkers delay traffic on Highway 17. And I really thought that Scott Kennedy didn't object to the original occupation of Highway 17. I don't get this. Is he trying to sneak back with a few of his big friends?
Are you call- now that's pretty low blow.
Low blow.
Now, I've called him Squawk Box Scott, but we chunky guys stick together. I want you to know that. So
well,
I'm not 300 pounds is I think an exaggeration.
I'm down on this political inflation and this economic inflation that's going on. It says two pigs each 300 pounds delay traffic on Highway 17 Saturday night.
Now, that's certainly a big ambiguity there.
It's probably the other station, K Pig.
Could have been K Pig.
It was Saturday night after all. Crazy singer Phil in the back here says that was a checkpoint run by these pigs and they lost their clothing somehow and they were seen naked. And it says they escaped from their pens or police stations, I'm not sure which, and they scampered onto the southbound lanes between Granite Creek Road and Mount Hermon. No accidents or injuries, but the highway patrol had to try and round them up. These were private enterprise pigs from a private residence. They briefly entered traffic lanes. You see these pigs talking to each other. Hey, let's not make this too long. I gotta get home and watch the news. So, they did clog traffic with their muddy trotters. Officers did corral the pigs, and animal control officers. Didn't we send out the animal control officers from Free Radio Santa Cruz?
apparently, Narcata is sending out the vegetable control officers. That's
isn't Skidmark Bob and Feel Free? Aren't they animal control officers?
No one can control those people.
And they're poor. Oh, now there's a class distinction here. It says their poor owner was pretty worried about. Look at that, Robert. It says their poor owner, as if only peasants own pigs.
Yes. Well, I'm pleased that you provided that exciting comic interlude for us, Nutcracker Nick, and I'm going to even extend that interlude a little further with a little bit of Jolly Roger radio from the Jolly Roger comedy troupe while we attempt to remove Phil Free from the station physically.
Capitalists own pigs.
I want
to play my rowdy seniors 1 minute. 1 minute of seniors protest in which they tell us they're going to rush the Congress and take over.
You can, but first we're going to have 3 minutes of the Jolly Roger.
St. Francis of Assisi, born the son of a wealthy cloth merchant in the 12th century, was a pleasure-loving and glory-seeking youth until a year spent as a prisoner of war, followed by a serious illness, inspired him to renounce all his possessions and serve God through prayer, penance, and charity to the poor. Literally interpreting the gospel, St. Francis traversed the countryside, dressed in a coarse wool tunic, preaching by word and example until a botched effort to create nuclear fusion accidentally sent him through time to the future and placed him, as luck would have it, in the city that bears his name.
All aboard the Powell Street cable car!
Good heavens, I must be having a vision. This strange apparition is clearer than the seraph and the stigmata I saw after fasting 40 days.
Get off the rails, you bum, or I'll run you down! You dirty, no-count, no-good homeless bum!
Oh, my, what a hostile landscape I find myself a part of. I'd better find a quiet place to collect my thoughts, or perhaps pray a while. There's a little park surrounded by pigeons where I can feed the birds some crumbs. Here you go, my little ones. Enjoy a few crumbs from a humble sinner who seeks the simple life through prayer, penance, and renunciation of the world's vanity.
Hey, you there, in the costume. Quit feeding the birds.
Ah, but my good man, these two are God's creatures and share the blessings of God's grace, even as you and I.
All right. You want to play hardball? Here's your ticket, Looney Tunes. Feeding the birds is a violation of Penal Code Section 486, and you've got a date with the judge.
Penal Code Section 486? I thought 486 was the degrees of grand theft.
Tell it to the judge, you loony tune, and put some shoes on. There's syringes all over this place.
I'd better switch to my high-top sandals. What a strange, strange land. Truly, I've been called to walk among these forlorn and hopeless people and preach the gospel of peace, love, brotherhood, campaign finance reform. I've been called by the Almighty to...
Well, I've been called by the local merchants, please.
No, my good man. My name is St. Francis, and I've simply been called by God to demonstrate humankind's poetic affinity with nature.
Yeah, well, pleased to meet you, but you need a permit for demonstrations here in San Francisco. Move along now. You're putting a cramp in the tax base.
Yes, my good man, of course. This is truly a miracle. I've been chosen by God to restore this strange land, San Francisco, to its point of origin, the tender-hearted charity that must exist at the core of a city named after me. This town must have given me top billing because somewhere in its soul, it knows that only through penance and self-effacing charity can one truly know inner peace. Why, just over there I see a group of people who seem to know the way of penance and charity. Their bodies are painfully pierced and tattooed, and they're cheerfully serving free hot meals to the poor.
What do you have, a friend?
Why, I seek inner peace and the grace of God within.
Okay, want to start with a hot meal?
Well, actually, that bean soup smells really good.
Here you go, friend.
Mmm, cilantro. Gracious thanks to you, good neighbor. How, in this city of callous disregard for human suffering, do you and your companions come to know the virtues of charity and goodwill?
Oh, I don't know, man. We just do it.
Are you a religious order? Know any of the Friars Minor?
No, not exactly. We're called Food Not Bombs, and we get together and cook hot food and do our best to feed anybody who's hungry. Here, have an onion bagel.
Thanks. Clearly it is part of my admission to join together with you on a mission of service to the poor.
Be my guest. Hey, we can always use the help. Here's the ladle, here's the cups. Just make sure everybody gets what they need, and I'll get some more of these bagels. Oh, everybody, here come the cops again.
Okay, you're all under arrest.
What's the charge?
Serving soup without a permit. Pour out those buckets and round them up, boys.
But wait! You're throwing away good food while these people go hungry. How can the good city of San Francisco, named after yours truly, by the way, condone this wanton waste of God's bounty?
Hey, this is the same bozo I saw making trouble earlier. Take him down to the station, boys.
But I'm St. Francis. I've solemnized my vows to Lady Poverty. I serve God through prayer and penance, and hey, these handcuffs are really tight, you know?
That's it, boys. Let's get this circus out of the way of the tourists. Nothing to see here, folks. Show's over. Hey, these bagels are really good.
You should try the bean soup. The cilantro gives it just that touch, you know, that little edge. Hey, these nutballs really can cook.
Don't mind if I do. You're right, Sarge. We're going to have to get this recipe next time.
And so St. Francis was hauled off to 850 Bryant, where he was held on his earlier bench warrant for feeding the birds. Fortunately, his mistreatment at the hands of the police in the city that bears his name only intensified his faith in human charity, and rumor has it that the earliest symbols depicting the fisted carrot can be traced back to 13th century Italy. You're listening to NPR, National Pirate Radio.
And you are listening now to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and the call-in, in case you wish to call, is 427-3772. This is Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides, your Monday and Friday Civil Rights for the Poor show, which probably will be, well, not sure how long we're going to go today. We'd like to go till 1, but that depends on who shows up at noon. It's always an interesting question. I'm going to turn over the mic again, dubiously, mind you, to Nutcracker Nick Whitehead, who has more... tell us what you're up to, Nick.
No more pigs. And I got rid of the pigs. I chased them all out.
Good, good.
I'm just cleaning up the muck they left behind. Mm-hmm. This is a rowdy group of seniors, non-polite, but political seniors in Washington. They were holding a protest about cuts in the Medicare funding. So let's hear what they're up to on the steps of the White House.
The senior citizens and all, yes, in our country.
I'm still young, but still I feel that it can affect me somehow. You know, it may not affect me today, but what about tomorrow? If we do not do something about it today, we're going to come around and say, well, what happened? Why didn't someone do something about it?
A lot of us voted Republican before, but we're not going to do it this time because this is a slit-throat kind of thing that they're doing to us. They're cutting behind our back. They haven't given us a chance, a long enough chance to protest, but we're going to get many, many more people in, and if we have to, we're going to storm the Congress about it.
Don't you dare cut Medicare! Don't you dare!
Don Rush, Pacifica Network News, Washington.
Oh, you heard that. Storm the Congress. How about that, huh?
Cut Medicare!
And...
Oh, this is the naming of Cesar Chavez. Shall we do that? A little rally. Just a little.
Oh!
Using a tactic from the great boycotts of the late 60s, supporters of the late Cesar Chavez lined both sides of Market Street with placards in hand. Some came from as far away as Delano in the Central Valley, but most were residents of the city. Mayoral candidate Roberta Achtenberg.
I am very proud that we renamed Army Street Cesar Chavez Street. Cesar Chavez is a hero. That's the kind of person streets in San Francisco should be named after.
While the issue of naming a street after the much-loved leader was clear-cut to those present today, it has not been without controversy. The San Francisco Board of Supervisors voted unanimously earlier this year to rename the three-mile stretch of Army Street after the founder of the United Farm Workers. But some Army Street residents and businesses have opposed the renaming, citing the unnecessary expense and confusion it will cause. Mitchell Friedman is a resident of Army Street.
There are clearly better, less costly, less divisive ways to honor our leaders. There are many needs in San Francisco that cry out.
All right, so Nick, there you have it, right-wing trash on our left-wing station. Shocking.
Yeah, pros and cons of the Army Street. It's good. Why don't they rename the whole Army Cesar Chavez Peace Workers? Oh, I'd rather go for that.
Well, I think we need some maybe how about Phil Freeville or possibly Robert Norris Alley? I don't know.
Phil has already got a city named after him. Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love.
So here we are again in the studio, and I actually wanted to do a little kind of break this up with a little reading here. I wanted to give Carol Denny's report. That was it. Carol Denny is an activist in Berkeley who has been keeping her kick the ass of the rich, but it's such a big ass it takes so long to kick. It's she's been doing it for some time. And the latest scheme by the university, Re-People's Park, a small but mighty park, four or five blocks from the University of California in Berkeley, which was begun by the community back in 1969 and maintained since the community by the community since that time, in spite of repeated efforts by the university to close it down, fence it in, turn it into a parking lot, turn it into housing, turn it into sports courts. Hey, they're trying everything they can. The latest assault on the People's Park has been a plan to put up more sports courts across the park, turning it into kind of a yuppie center. And that has been opposed by the very group that was paid $100,000 by the university to look into. That was a group called Concur, which kind of held forums and sessions to determine what the community wanted. And they found out the community wanted to pull out the volleyball court, which was a mistake in the first place, and put in a children's playground, and then think long and hard before provoking a violence and riot and conflict in downtown Berkeley with the latest university plan to remove Food Not Bombs from the park and to remove the Free Box from the park. That was a decision of the university-established, university-funded